everybody. This is Just the Case, and welcome to another episode of Pod Rock, episode 5. And with me, I have my loyal partner in crime,
Ben.
Yep. So we have a new, fresh round of topics. We're going to talk a little bit about hardware. We're going to talk a little bit about some Queensryche stuff. And we're probably throwing some fretwire type things as well, as far as sizes. But before we do that, I'd like to toss it over to Ben for some quick updates.
Yeah, so quite a few things actually happened the past couple of weeks for news. Some people might know, people might know. As always, we'll probably talk about some of this stuff at the beginning of our podcast. Chickenfoot, for those who are fans of Michael Anthony and Joe Satriani, they are in a band called Chickenfoot. And they will still be doing some new music. Michael Anthony said there is going to be another album or at least some new them, which will be great. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to some of their stuff, being a Satriani fan.
I've got a couple. I've got their.
Okay. Yeah. So you're aware. Another one was apparently Elton John collaborated with Metallica.
I thought that you were going to say he collapsed.
No. Oh, okay. maybe from the tempo of the Metallica songs. So I wonder how that mix is going to be. Being an Elton John connoisseur, I listened to some of his stuff. I've liked it. He's very good at managing and changing keys in his music, which I think is kind of his thing, which is great. So it'd be interesting to see what he did with Metallica.
That thing with Ozzy a couple years back here.
Yeah.
So he seems to be leaning towards the metal side of things, which is interesting. He does have a very powerful voice, we'll say that.
He does. He absolutely does. One thing I wanted to get your opinion on, this kind of got brought up in the news recently, was a new COVID-19 app putting out to help determine access to concerts in New so the idea is you have this app and you use it and it states that you're free or however it's functioning, and it will actually allow you to get into the concert venue with it verifying that you're clear and safe to be, you know, grouped in with a bunch of people. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, that's the first I've heard of it, but I know there have been efforts to coerce people into getting shots and things of that nature, like if you want to go on a cruise or something. I think that you probably have to be comfortable with taking the thing in the first place before going to a concert. I mean, yeah, it'd be nice to go to concerts, but, you know, the thing is that I think it's more important that you feel safe taking a vaccine, figure out which one works for you. But I don't think that a concert's going to be a determining factor for me, you know. And
yeah.
I think that that's a bit in truth, and I don't agree with it. You know, you don't see them doing that for flu shots or anything.
That's true. And they're actually, there's going to be some concerts already set up for this year. I think Lietta Ford is doing a concert with some other bands. So it's going to be interesting to see how venues handle big groups and if it's going to be the same thing as like the sporting events where 35% capacity, or if they're going to spread people out, how they're going to do that and manage it. But I hope they do bring back live music. I think it's
needed. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just think real quick that it, with that, going to concerts is really that important to you. Just go get a shot and get done with it, I guess, you know. But that's really all I have to say about that.
So I don't know if you are familiar with Lace Music. They released a passive loaded pick guard.
Oh, Lace Sensor pickups.
Yeah, they call it the Pick Guard Plus. It's different iterations of the product, and it dispenses the need for a battery on your pickups, but it still makes them somewhat active. The circuitry gives the options of different capacitors on it. So it's almost like if you're thinking of like a Fender guitar with the pickups in it and the pick guard sitting right there, you would take all that out and you'd put this piece in there, and it would give you the option to have the equivalent of almost like an EMG pickup, in essence of having an active pickup in the system. I thought it was rather interesting design. Where you would do that, but it is definitely worth at least reading about and checking out if you haven't. I thought it was kind of ingenious to, you know, you just pull things out, slap something else in there instead of just doing an individual pickup. You've almost got the pick guard as kind of like your main functioning circuitry and circuit behind it. I wanted to bring that up.
Have you ever tried Lace Sensor pickups, Ben?
I have not. I'm kind of an old school bird. I've kind of stuck with the Seymour Duncans. I prefer those. The bass that I have does have EMG pickups on it, and it's active, And for me, I think it definitely kind of continues to bring that that tone on the bass across instead of the passive, which, you know, there's pros and cons for each, as you know. I mean, I don't know how many guitars you have with an active pickup on it or not, but the bass that I have, like I said, has the EMGs, and I definitely like the tone that it gives out of it.
I got the 8-string.
Oh, yeah, okay.
EMG 808s, and I can tell you that these pickups, I think they're really good for, they're tight, and but I think a lot also has to do with the fact that this is a string through body on, it's mahogany, and you'll see it's got a laminate, kind of a, they laminate it, kind of hard to see, I know our viewers can't see this, but it's got a, there's several strips of wood there, it's a laminate that they press together and
okay.
Sculpted heel, but no, I think a lot of the, what they people complain about with EMG is the loss of high frequency when you roll the volume back. And so it's either when you roll the volume back or it's they just the tonality, some people, it's just not for them. But I would say to that, it's like, well, when I think EMGs, I'm thinking metal. Metal, you're not going to be rolling the volume back in metal. You're going to be full out, you know, gangbuster.
Oh,
you know?
Full tilt. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I do like them for clean tones, too. I don't see the problem with them. I like them. I think that. It gives you something different to win instead of just having passive pickups all the time. I like them. I think they're really nice. And if anything, they give you clear tone, even with the overdrive. They're very defined, and I like them.
Yeah.
So, and I do have some kind of cheap active pickups on that Bullseye Les Paul replica that I've got. So, and they're okay. But this, the 808s, I like them a lot, and I think they're good. So, they get my seal of approval. That's my thought. So, but...
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, and I would encourage anybody to try different pickups too. You know, just because I'm an old dog and I like to stick kind of with what I'm used to doesn't mean that you shouldn't definitely branch out. Like I said, the bass I have, I use the active, I love it.
Yeah. Well, and EMG offers the HZ pickups where, like, I think they're like half the price, and are still amazing.
Yes, absolutely. It you know, just goes to what we had talked about before, which is, you know, different sounds, different tones. You know, every piece of the guitar, you know, it being interchangeable, you get different flavors, especially even just out of the wood of the guitar. So definitely, absolutely. You know, mm-hmm. Play around with different pickups, because a guitar that you have, a Fender, you know, if you try to throw in different pickups, you'll definitely get a different tone to it and a different feel. And you might play differently. And, you know, even for me, picking up new guitars, different guitars, I end up getting even almost more creative, if that makes any sense, just because of the feel of it, the sound of it, and what you can get out of it. The other thing I wanted to bring up that we gearheads have been kind of talk about, and I wanted to kind of go into this, was the different bridges of the guitars. I know that I'm a Floyd Rose fan. I have Floyd Rose on 3 out of my 4 guitars. I do have one LTD that is a tailstop. For me, I like the ability to lock it down and know that it'll stay in tune. I don't see, you know, I know a lot of people get complications with trying to keep the, you know, the dual locking down and keeping the tonality and keeping it in tune. I think that for me, I'm willing to spend the extra time making sure that it's set up correctly, right? And I think that's what a lot of people don't. They don't right. take the time to do it, and it's not something that's like a half-hour deal. If you're going to do it and do it right, it will take you a bit of time, but when you do, you'll appreciate it, because when you get that set up exactly right in the sweet spot, you can do whatever you want, dive bomb, bend, do massively awesome things with your guitar, and it'll stay in tune.
I mean, that goes for any floating bridge, really, even the import like Squire bridges and stuff, you can still get those to stay if you balance the springs and you put some, maybe some graphite in the nut there, and make sure that the string, if it's got a cap stand like an older style Fender peg head where the string goes straight down and then you wind it, there's a way to do that to make sure it stays in. But the biggest thing is really making sure that the spring balance on the back of the guitar is perfect, and that has to be adjusted. And because really originally, even the Fender Strat bridges are designed to be floating, not pressed against the body, just be pushed down. Leo Fender designed those to full floating sims. So, and I love Floyd Roses, and I think they're great, and I absolutely agree with you. You know, maybe a few hours of work, but you get, who knows? I mean, depending on how much you play your guitar, you get several months of great performance. It's definitely worth a few hours of work or have a setup done on it. But I would encourage everyone to learn how to set up your own stuff. And that way, You don't have to be paying. Because, I mean, hey, as labor charges go up over time, which they already have, 10 years ago, labor charges were half what $35 would have got you good setup. Now it's $70 to $100, depending on who's doing it and how much work you need done. So you have the internet, go use it, and you'll learn how to set up stuff yourself. And you also will learn more about your instrument. If you've got a favorite guitar, you spend time with it, you know the quirks of it, you know what's going to make it perform its best. If you have to buy some replacement parts, something breaks, you're going to know how to put that stuff in yourself and get that guitar dialed in. You spent the time with it. And so I will offer that any floating bridge I like a lot, but you know, I'm not paid by Ernie Ball, but I could tell you these John Petrucci floating bridges they put on here, I had my doubts. And after I got a couple of their guitars for myself, I'm an advocate for things in a way, because you can do anything you want. You can do anything with this that you can do with a float. Full travel, you can do whammy bar dives, go nuts with it. And it's because it's a straight pull through the neck. You've got a compensated nut. You've got the Shaler locking tuners. And as long as you put a little bit of maybe some of that Big Ben's stuff in there, the nut sauce stuff, if you put some of that in there, it'll keep that from getting dried out, and that string will not bind. And I like having locking tuners a lot, because you can just pull the string through the bridge and then lock it down up top. And once you stretch those strings out, you're good to go. I mean, I can literally get this guitar ready to play in probably 10 or 15 minutes. And the nice thing is that they use on their bridges is they have a brass sustain block on the bridge, which makes a huge difference in sustain. So they've come a long way in bridges over time, just general technology. And people have done a lot of research on the things you were talking about, Ben, where there's people have grievances about bridges, things like that. And they found that, you know, if you update your bridge to a brass block, the sustain is amazing. I would say on par with a stop tail. And it's phenomenal. And just to try it out, there's a really cool trick. There's a guitarist named Carl. He does session work for Hollywood. He was saying what he does is he'll pluck a string and then he'll hold the body of, he like strats. Carl Weyerhaeyen, that's the guy. And he'll pluck a string and he'll just hold the horn of the strat and feel the resonance of it. And that's just like something he kind of came up for himself. And if he likes how that feels acoustically plugged in, not plugged in, but just to feel the guitar vibrate, then you know you have a live one. And
so I did want to bring up one thing that you mentioned with the locking tuners. Mm-hmm. I had a guitar. I need to look it up again because it's been quite a few years. There was a gentleman that was at Fender, and he started his own company and making guitars. And I bought one of them, and there was very limited series because it didn't last long. He ended up taking a huge amount of money out for a loan to start the company, and they didn't sell as quick as he thought they would. They had a built-in locking strap. It was just a button push on the front, you know, on the back side of it and near the normal spot where you'd put your strap. The thing that stood out to me was the way that they had the tuning pegs. You'd put the string through, but then you'd pinch down by turning the actual peg area where the string went through to lock the string in. I don't think what you're talking about is the exact same thing. So what kind of locking tuners are your brand?
These are Shaler locking tuners. And the way these work is you pull the string through the nut or through the tuning pegs straight through, and then there's a dial on the back, and on the inside of the tuning peg itself is a little block. And when you tighten the knob on the back, it will push that block up towards the string inside that tuning peg to where it pinches, right? And then once you have that locked in, then the string's locked in place, then you tune it up like you would a regular Strat that's fully wound around the peg. Or any other guitar, it could be a Gibson Les Paul, it could be a Flying V. That's how those work. There's a little block in there that pinches in place, so it will not slip on the peg. And that's one of the biggest things for tuning stability is not only binding at the nut, but also slippage at the tuning peg of the guitar. So once you have those two things dialed in, your tuning stability is going to be dramatically improved. And that's how these peg heads work. Yeah, it's a very great design. I mean, and Shaler is only one company that does them like this. Spurzel's another one. Fender makes their own variation of these. It works the same exact way. I have those two. They work great. Spurzel makes excellent locking tuners. I have those on a couple of guitars. And that's how these work. And you don't need a locking nut. And that's the only locking place it really is up at the tuning peg. So It's a great question. And the first company I noticed that really started doing the graphite nut, or the not like a non-plastic nut, would be Carvin. Carvin actually is who I noticed was actually doing the non-Floyd Rose. Or, well, they use a Floyd Rose, but they don't have a locking nut. They run it right through, and they have locking tuners. So it's still a double locking system in a way, because for a Floyd Rose, you're locking at the bridge. You're locking up at the tuners. You're just not locking at the nut. There was a lot of guitars that they made. Like, they had some really nice 7-strings Carvin did back about 20 years ago. They had the DC 727 and DC 747, which I just loved. And at the time, I couldn't get them to make me a left-handed version of those of a 7-string. And they do a Wilkinson, but they said their machines weren't set up to do Floyd Rose routing, which is absurd. But that company now exists as Kiesel, and they're now doing lefties anything you want. They'll build anything you want custom. I almost went with them, but then Ernie Ball was able to take orders for me for the 7-string and the 6-string models that I wanted. So I went with them instead, and I'm glad I did. And if they weren't able to do that, I would have went with Kiesel. But yeah, that's how that system works. And you could put a Floyd Rose, and a Floyd Rose would work great just with that. So really what you could do, if you didn't want to have a locking, you could keep the Floyd Rose on there, go put a compensated nut or a Graf-Tech nut on there, and then just go with locking tuners at the headstock for very little money, you know, for an upgrade. You just got to get the nut in place of where the graphite one is. So it's doable, but I think that personally I like Floyd Rose guitars that have a locking nut. I don't see it as a problem. Like you said, you go and you learn how to set it up. It's really not that bad. Stretch the strings out for a couple days. Lock it down after you get your intonation and your truss rod and everything set, and you're good to go, man.
Yeah, if you're not comfortable messing around with your primary guitar, go find one at a pawn shop. You know, go find and spend.
Practice.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're scared of ruining your favorite guitar, which I will absolutely tell you, I am deathly scared of playing with the ones that I love the most. Because I have actually destroyed a guitar before by taking it apart and trying to put it back together was absolutely my first time. I couldn't get it back together correctly.
Was it expensive?
No, it was it was a cheap knockoff of a Gibson-like guitar that one of my brother's friends had, and when he was in a band as a drummer, and he left it at our house, and you know, he moved away and never came to pick it back up. So I was interested. And this is back when I was in high school. I was like, okay, you know, hey, let's take this thing apart and you know, put it back together so I can understand, you know, the parts and pieces to it the way that I wanted to. I got it back together, but the intonation was off. The strings weren't off the fretboard like they should have been. And I think I put different gauge of strings on it too. So, you know, being wet behind the ear trying to build something that, you know, I didn't really have any experience doing, it was definitely one of those, I'm glad I did it on that guitar versus one that I spent a good amount of money on, like my ESP, the first one I got.
Absolutely.
So yeah, you can get a guitar at a pawn shop, you know, pretty inexpensive in comparison to some of these other nicer ones that you can buy too. I was just gonna say, I'm hoping that my next venture and the next guitar I want to get is a Paul Reed Smith guitar, and it's gonna have a Floyd on it too. So
very cool.
Yeah, you were gonna bring up an item you had there.
Yeah, this is another type of bridge. You guys can't see it, but it's called a Kaler, and it's a Kaler bridge. And the way it works is it's got two mounting studs like you'd have for a stop bar piece, like for a Nashville style bridge, like a Les Paul would have, or a tunematic bridge, I guess is what you want to call it. And the way that system works is it's actually a universal type bridge. You can put the whammy bar on either side of the bridge if you're a righty or a lefty, but you've got four threaded holes to put that whammy bar, right? So you could, depending on where you want the whammy bar to sit on the guitar, they give you like four different places, which I think is amazing. And even the posts that where they lock in, there's a set screw there to give it, to tighten it up, so you get really good sustain. And it doesn't use like a tone block like a typical guitar would have, but it's got three springs on the bottom that are actually in the mechanism that allows it to move back and forth. So this bridge, you know, the problem that people have had with them is that they're great, but they say they're hard to get parts for. But I think I'm going to put this, I got this one for $100 and brand new, and I'm going to put it on my 8-string, and I think it's going to be great. And the great thing about them is that if you break a string, your bridge will not go flat because each string is independent. So it's got that ability where if you actually broke a string, it will not detune the guitar. So I believe that's how those work. So I'm excited to try it. I couldn't believe I could find one that cheap, but it was a reclaimed part and it's a genuine Kaler. So, you know, it's pretty neat. So I can't wait to try it on an 8-string.
There's two other bridges that are Floating Roses that are kind of like, well, one is definitely like one. And the other one is the Detuna. I want to bring that up, and I also want to bring up the Trans Trim. Both of them are, to me, and I'll explain kind of each one. The Detuna, as you know, was an Eddie Van Halen gift to the world of guitarists. Once again, I think people had some issues with incorporating it into their guitar. Some people, I think, originally had to cut out areas in order to use the whammy instead of just diving. They want to pull up on the whammy bar and get the go higher notes. When you had that Detuna on there, it prevented you from being able to go higher on the pull. You had to always depress and you had to do the dive bombs. And right. People were having problems, you know, keeping things in tune. Once again, I think that is also probably just a setup feature. Where, absolutely, you know, if you're buying something, understand it, what it does and limitations would be after you install it, right? Did you have one? I've never had one on a guitar.
I was going to get one, and because it's actually not a bridge. It's actually a component that you put on the bridge. And you put it where the 6th saddle is so you can do a drop D, right?
Yep.
And that's really – and the guitar, the bridge would stay – you have to have the bridge where it only pushes down. You have to have it set there. Like you're saying, but the thing is that I think I would probably only get one now at this point because the turnoff for me was I couldn't have a floating bridge. But the thing is that the only way I would get one is if I got an Eddie Van Halen guitar with one already on there. There's two models you can get right now. I'm going to get probably the really nice one. There's one that's the paint job is a replica of the Frankenstrat or maybe one of the Kramer guitars that he had in the 80s after he quit using his Frankenstrat. We'd mentioned this on the show before. He got an endorsement with Kramer Guitars. So that he had a Kramer guitar that was actually striped black, white, and red. And so they've got Fender EVH products through Fender. Fender's the backer, the parent company. Actually has that and also has a Wolfgang Standard. They've got the Wolfgang USA, which is what I'm going to get. It's a nice sunburst with a nice binding on it. And it's got a maple neck and I'm looking forward to picking one of those up, and it comes with a Detuna as a standard component, and it's all set up ready to go. I had heard there were people that were having problems with the Frankenstrat style guitar that EVH put out with that bridge, that switching that Detuna back and forth, because it's spring load, if I'm not mistaken, to kind of click, and then you go to drop D, and then you click it back in and go to standard. And, or, I mean, obviously, if you're half step down or whatever, it goes back to the E flat, but people had been having problems with how that component would snap back in and how intimate they really would be. So with any Floyd Rose, again, if you balance those springs with the string tension, you'll be fine. But I would offer that I would spend the extra scratch. Well, it's actually double. I think those Frankenstrat guitars run about $1,000 versus $3,300 for the Wolfgang USA model. But I would say that you'd be just fine. Just make sure it's like with any guitar. I mean, if you buy a decent guitar, I mean, even if you're spending $900 to $1,000, that's a really nice guitar. I mean, that's because look at the guitars these days, they're cheap for like $300, like a Squire Classic Vibe Strat or Tele or something. Those are really nice guitars, and they're in the lower end of the price range. So when you're spending $1,000 on a guitar, you're going to get a pretty decent instrument generally. I've not heard anyone complaining about, hey, I dropped $1,000 on a guitar and it's junk. It might not be always what you want. Maybe because you know how kind of reminds me Spock said on the episode where him and Kirk had to fight on Vulcan. Was it a mock time? It was a mock time. And he's like, you may find that having is not nearly desirable as wanting. So a lot of people want this guitar and they get it and it's just like not what they expected. And so I would say, though, that you're generally safe with an EVH Frankenstein with a D-Tuna. I think it'd be just fine. Just make sure it's set up properly. Because there's videos out there on YouTube and stuff you can watch or share. I like having those reviews by people that actually are regular Joes that bought the guitar and said if they like it or not. And it's always good to separate out the people that are just generally angry at the world and then ones that, like, well, I had it for a little while and I had to send it back because there was production or something. I'm going to get one. It's not going to stop me, so...
Well, I look forward to your review on it. I really do.
Yeah.
Because I'm agreeing with you. There's been a lot of different reviews that I've seen out there. A lot of, you know, don't like them. A lot of people do like them. But I think, like I said, and this is kind of going to be the theme for me on this stuff as far as bridges, is knowing how to set up your guitar and making sure that you're setting it up correctly for these things that mm-hmm. you're putting on it or that you're using on your guitars. You said springs. I want to bring that up because I know that was a conversation you and I have had recently that mm-hmm. – how many springs would you use on the back of Floyd Rose or a floating bridge like that? For me, I think it has to do with the gauge of your strings and the tension that you're trying to throw on the guitar itself as far as the playability of it. Most that I've seen, my ESP, the one with 24 frets has 3 springs to it. The one that I bought that was the LTD Skull guitar, the Mike Wilton one, I added an actual spring to that one, not because I thought it wasn't playable, but it was the strings were just a little too loose, and it definitely tightened that up for me. What's your take, and how many springs will you say, or do you have a different opinion?
Good question. I love this talk. This is some good stuff, Ben. I have, people can't see this, but it's a Jackson Performer. It's a Jackson PS4 Performer, which I've had for 21 years now. I think the guitar, it was actually made in 99, so guitar is old. It's 22, so I can't believe I'm saying that, but it was my first real guitar. It's got really good weight to it, but sounds amazing, and it's got 3 springs for a Floyd. I like having 3 springs because I like having the whammy bar and the bridge have a little bit of more of a, what would you say, a rubbery feel as opposed to a real stiff. Because I like having that expressiveness of the bridge. Because I'm not gonna sit there and be going all crazy with the bridge or anything. But it's really good for melodies and stuff. And so I like, because of that, I take 3 springs and they're medium tension. Here's one thing to remember about springs. There's actually companies out there that will sell you a certain tension of spring to put on the bridge and the claw. And I go with ones that are kind of a tougher gauge or a thicker medium gauge. Really nice springs, not those cheap ones that you get, because those will never even keep the bridge level. And that's another aspect of tuning stability, that you have to have good quality springs so that the tension will come back to zero. It has to neutralize. And that's another reason for tuning problems, is that the springs themselves aren't very good and they can't keep the bridge at a zero or return to pitch, is what I'm trying to say. So I use 3, and I angle them towards the center. Now, this is for my Floyd, and this is a TRS Floyd that was made in Japan. It's considered a Floyd Rose license bridge, right? But it's got the whammy bar. You'll see it'll have a hex nut on top, and the whammy bar for this will screw into the bridge itself that's there, the bridge assembly. And this is a Jackson bridge, but it stays in tune amazing. I mean, this guitar, I have never had to change anything out on it. It's all original, and it's just great. It's my workhorse. I love this thing, and I would never take it out on, if I went on like the road or on tour, I would never take this out of the house, because this is my first real guitar, and I've always liked the way this Floyd Rose bridge is on here. So that's kind of, I adapted my style and my preferred feel of a bridge to this guitar. So I use, even on a Strat, I use 3 springs. I have another 7 string. It's my Kramer 7 string I've had for about 19 years. And I'm on my second bridge on that. And this time I went with a Floyd Rose. I think it might be a Floyd Rose Pro, or it might be a Floyd Rose 1000. There's several different Floyd Rose type bridges out there. Even this, it's an official Floyd. The one before was a licensed one, and it was pretty good for a while, but then the knife edges on the bridge wore out. Once that happens,
you gotta sharpen those.
The problem is you can't you can only sharpen them so much, because then they get to a point to where the metal just is not going to stay conformed to what it needs to. So I would go with a really nice, they even make surgical grade steel bridges and knife edges and stuff. I mean, the metal that they use in some of the bridges are really nice, especially if you go with the highest the Floyd Rose, like the Floyd Rose units that are really expensive. Like, I mean, I think they're either $500 or $1,000, some of them. And there's a, it's, I think that if you really want to have a Floyd Rose on your guitar, spend the extra money and get a good unit that's going to stay in tune. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable. I would not, personally, I would not recommend a Floyd Rose Pro. Also, the Floyd Rose Special is one that will wear out because they are genuine Floyds, but the metal is not as high quality as maybe their more expensive models. It'll stay in tune for a while, but if you're a heavy whammy bar user, it'll, those knife edges will wear out. And so if you're like a Steve Vai fan and you want to sit there and go ape on the thing and hang the guitar by the whammy bar, it's probably not going to work out very well for you. And so that's my take on that, Ben. And I think, heck, even a good bridge will even stay in tune without the locking nut for a while. So you can leave the Allen wrenches and the plates off there, and it'll probably stay in tune pretty well.
So you're a three spring guy, right?
Three spring guy.
Okay.
Too stiff with four.
The other one that I wanted to bring up was the trans trim. And
yep.
For me,
Steinberger.
Yes, exactly. It was, for me, this was iconic. Another Eddie Van Halen comment on this one. The song Me Wise Magic.
Ooh, if nice.
If you have not heard that song, awesome. Go listen to it. He uses this in the I would say within the first minute of the song itself.
I've got the chords in my head right now.
Yes, and even at the end when he does the harmonic slide, almost mm-hmm. like a pinch harmonic sliding sound. It's amazing. The trans trim for me, it stood out in that song just because he went from playing in one key and then went straight into almost, I don't even remember if it was either half step or full step down after he adjusted it.
Right.
But just the fact that, you do that in that song and bring out the different tonalities of a guitar in music like that was amazing. The other person I want to say that I know that used it, David Gilmour from Pink Floyd, he used it on a song. Yeah. I'll have to look up on what album it was and what song, but I know that he was also listed as one of the people that had used that bridge. It's a cool concept, and it's a cool way to bring a different feel to the song. I what's your thoughts on that?
I think that's great. And David Gilmour, I always knew that he was great, especially I like his stuff in the 80s. He went solo, man. I mean, his Pink Floyd stuff was great too, but when he started doing his own band, man, especially when he came out with, I should say, when he pretty much was fronting Pink Floyd in the 80s, after Roger Waters, he skedaddled, and because they had a falling out or whatever, and he took over as the kind of the guy sailing the ship. And mm-hmm. when he started using those Fenders with he would chop off the whammy bar so that it was easier for him to pluck the strings and stuff, and he didn't have to, like, the whammy bar would be real close by because he liked to play and do a lot of whammy bar dives and stuff. And it was neat because he used a Fender bridge for that. And I don't remember, he set it up to fully float, but he also used the Lay Sensor pickups you're talking about earlier. And I don't ever remember him being a Floyd, but he was able to have those bridges set up on his guitars so that they do everything a Floyd would use. I mean, he would use the whammy bar in melodies and everything, just like a Floyd would, and I was always fascinated by that. And so it took me a long while to realize that for those Strat bridges that he used, they weren't Floyds, but they put a spring inside the cavity for the whammy bar. It would push up on the whammy bar so it wasn't loose inside the threads. And you can modify, actually, an import bridge. And so I thought that was great. And I don't think I've never seen him use a Floyd Rose bridge, but I'm sure maybe he's experimented with it. But I mean, that was cool. I didn't know he used the trans trim stuff. And I remember, didn't Eddie Van Halen's guitar with the trans trim, wasn't it a modified PV Wolfgang, or was it, what did it look like? Because I have a vague recollection of the picture. It had like probably the stripes on it, like it was a one-off.
It was a Steinberg guitar. I know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I used to have a picture of him holding that on my wall when I was.
So the David Gilmour one was on A Momentary Lapse of Reason, 1987, awesome. From Pink Floyd.
I love that album.
Kind of loop him back in the pickup conversation with the EMGs. David Gilmour used EMG pickups, active pickups for that. Eddie used it on Get Up, Summer Nights from 5150, Pleasure Dome from Lawful Carnal Knowledge, Fire in the Hole from Van Halen 3 and Miwise Magic. Another person, Mike, I'm going to say this wrong, Knopfler, Dire Straits leader.
Oh, Mark Knopfler, yeah.
Yes, he used it on the song Brother in Arms. So very, very interesting use. Like I said, the one that stood out to me was the Miwise Magic song. Just like I said, if you haven't heard it, I know you have, but anybody listening to this, if you haven't heard it, go and listen to it. It's a little bit lengthy of a song. I think it's like 6 minutes or something like that. It's a longer one, but it's worth it. And it's definitely killer. hang out for the end of it. You're going to hear some really wicked, just Eddie stuff, right? I mean, the sounds that he could create on a guitar were amazing.
There's a song he did on the Twister soundtrack where he used it again, and I think it was called Respect the Wind. It's an instrumental, and if you want to hear some cool stuff on that with that guitar, he used it on there too. And as a matter of fact, I think he probably used that on Van Halen 3 and a lot of different things with Sammy Hagar, because you can kind of hear that whining kind of harmonic effect on a lot of stuff he did in the 90s. He started to really gravitate. It was kind of his signature sound. And for the longest time, I thought that was his sustainer that he had on. And I found an old picture of David Gilmour playing a Steinberger. It's a white Steinberger. You know, and if people are trying to really visualize what those look like, they were popular in the 80s, and they looked like the guitar did not have a headstock. The strings, you didn't have to cut the ball ends on them. You would take the strings, you would hook the ball end of the strings that would normally go in a bridge. You'd hook them at the headstock, or what was supposed really notches for the strings, string it all the way back to the bridge and clamp it down there. And they're really cool for alternate tunings. I know Jimmy Page had one. It wasn't a whammy bar bridge. It wasn't a tremolo bridge, but it was one that he used, I think, in the 80s for some of his solo outings. And I had a poster of him playing one in the 80s.
Well, if you've got one, throw it up on Twitter for people to kind of to see this stuff. Maybe we should start doing that.
Probably a good idea. Yeah, let's keep going.
That's kind of what I had for bridges, other than the normal tailstop. I do, like I said, have an LTD that has a tailstop. I do enjoy those as well, especially if you're doing unison bend. Or compound bends. Bending, it just seems like you struggle, and maybe you don't, but I do a little bit to make sure that I'm staying in pitch on that second string when you're hitting it, right, to match the pitch correctly. So you really have to watch what you're bending on the Floyd Rose. But, you know, you get your technique down, and you can get it pretty damn close live, and then definitely on if you're recording stuff, you want to pay a little extra special attention to what you're doing, right? But the tail stops are great for that. From my case,
is your ESP, is it set up? Is your Michael Wilton model set up to float?
Yes, it is. I took it in, like you were saying earlier about the expense of getting it fixed. I took it into the same place that you had yours for your recommendation, and he set it up correctly. The tonation was fantastic when I got it back. The Floyd.
Yeah, the guy knows this stuff. He's awesome.
He does. He absolutely does. And great. That's, I guess, to bring up is, you know, if you take your guitars in to get fixed and you're not happy with what you get back, find someone that you like. You do find someone that's willing to work with you, that understands what you're asking for, that's willing to set it up in a way that you want. Stick with those people. Are hard to find. If you're not wanting to do it yourself and you're willing to pay it, definitely find the people that you want. There's been a couple people, even just amp-wise, the same gentleman that you recommended for twos from my Mesa. Unfortunately, he's not around anymore, but dude was right. Magic.
Yeah, I know. I know. It still hurts.
Yeah, he went through the whole entire schematics for my amp, found them online, just updated everything. I mean, not just the tube, went through the capacitors and everything on it. But I guess to kind of get back to what I was saying is find people that you're comfortable with doing the work on your guitar. You spent enough money on them. You definitely want them set up correctly, because you're going to find it when you do. You're just going to fall in love more with your instrument, because it's going to sound right. The pitch is going to be right. And it's gonna feel right. And I know that sounds kind of strange, but a lot of playing is feel, at least for me. What you're hearing, what you're feeling, what you're, you know, the pressing on the strings, the tension of the strings, the fretboard, all of that has a huge effect on what I'm playing, how I'm playing, and how I'm feeling it in my writing style. So definitely worth the money. If you don't want to do it yourself, find the person you to have set it up and work with them and ask them.
And if you do have an expensive guitar and you're not comfortable, that would be a case to do that. And I will say, even for myself, just out of paranoia or possible, you know, fine tuning for, I know if I know the guy that we were just talking about, Ben, that sets up our stuff. That guy is so good that it's not a matter of me worrying about breaking something. It's really, I know that that guy can dial it in so tight that even if after you change strings, the intonation is still really good. And it's just, that's why I take my really expensive, you know, if you've got a guitar that's over, it's like $2,000, over $3,000, you know, I've got a couple of those and I would rather have a professional because I know that they're going to, I use those for recording and I know they're going to sound their best. And that's just one quick side note is that if you're recording things, original music or whatever you're called to do, make sure that you have a guitar that you're proud to play and don't use some beat up piece of junk that doesn't sound good. I mean, like Eddie Van Halen had the Frankenstrat with your Frankenstein guitar that we talked about earlier. That guitar sounded phenomenal because that was kind of like lightning striking twice, right? And but you got to remember the guitar is also who's playing it, the hands. But play a guitar that you're comfortable with, and that you know, like, you know what, I know this guitar is gonna really, I'm gonna sound my best with it. And that's kind of my advice for that. And so take it to someone who does know what they're doing. That way, you're not gonna be like, oh man, this sounded great by itself, but when you play it with other instruments, it's all out of tune and stuff. It's not gonna work. So yeah, that's great, man. Great advice. And yeah, find a guitar that's gonna stay in tune.
Absolutely. Yeah. It makes all the difference. When you spend a little bit of time setting these things up, you spend some time, you know, some money, you know, putting it into the instrument, even after you buy it, to keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's well worth it. I mean, your recordings are going to sound better. Your playing is going to be better. Overall, it's going to have a huge effect. I think earlier you'd mentioned you wanted to talk about frets and the different fret sizes. I personally like the jumbo size frets. I have those on my M2. It just I loved it the minute I picked one up and started playing it. It doesn't have a bird's eye neck on it. It's more of the flatter end on the back side. It's not a boat neck like a normal Les Paul would be. But the frets themselves, I tend to like the jumbo frets. What's your take?
I like jumbo frets myself as well. But sometimes, like my JP guitars, my Ernie Balls have medium size, but those are great too, and they're stainless steel, so they're gonna last for pretty much forever. I like stainless steel frets because they won't wear down and they won't get divots from strings. I do a lot of bends, obviously, as do you, and you want to have frets that aren't gonna need to be recrowned, you know, a year down the road or whatever. So. But I like, a lot of times you can get frets that are, they're not jumbos, but they're tall frets. And that will still give you distance from the fretboard so it doesn't feel like a fretless wonder, as Gibson Les Pauls were known to be. And I've got a Gibson Flying V that's got mediums on it. Fender uses some pretty small fret wire. I've got this classic 5 Strat here, and it's a medium fret wire. But it's got a nice crown to it where it stands off the fretboard, so it doesn't feel like you can't dig into the, you know, and it's good for blues. It's good to bend with, and it's a slim neck. But yeah, I like jumbo frets myself, stainless steel. And make sure if you pick a guitar, you try some out if you can, and know that how you try a wide range of fret wires so that you know you're going to be happy with it. Because I'll tell you one thing, if you really get attached to a guitar, but you're like, man, these frets are too small, it's going to cost you a lot of money to get it refretted. You're looking at several hundred dollars. And if you're someone who doesn't like to spend money, I do. I like to keep the economy. Probably isn't a great policy, but for my guitars, I don't care. Just know that you're going to be spending some money if you don't not happy with the fret wire that you have. Some of the biggest fret wire you can get, I think actually on the market, would be the Dunlop 6000 or 6100 size. And like someone like Yngwie Malmsteen, he's got a scalloped fretboard where the wood is actually carved out between the frets. And even that, he's got super huge tall fret wire on there. Like Dunlop 6000 is what he used. Slash On his appetite for destruction, Les Paul, I think, had his refretted and was 6,100 Dunlop. He likes having jumbo fret on his stuff, and which I think is pretty cool. And Zach Wild, any of the shredders, they like tall fret wire because it's that light touch.
Yep, absolutely.
So much easier to bend little shredding stuff. So
I thought you brought up I'm sorry to cut you off. You brought up a good thought there as far as going and testing out different guitars and finding out what you like. I know, obviously, it's hard to do in some cases now, but definitely, you know, I would encourage that too. Go to a music shop, you know, guitar center or wherever you can, and if they have different models of different types of guitars, just jam out on a couple, you know, bend strings. You'll find that some of them have what Justin was saying, kind of a divot or a dead spot, as they also call it, on the fretboard. So check out for those when you know, before you buy the guitar too, as well. You know, check out the frets, check out how it sounds, check out how it feels, make sure it doesn't have dead spots in it, and just see what you like. If it's something that's comfortable for you to play, that's a huge thing. You know, you don't want to be fighting your guitar. I think you even told me that at one time we were having a conversation in one of our recording sessions we were doing. It's like, you don't feel like you have to fight the guitar, because then it's just not fun and it doesn't sound right.
It'll ruin your hands too, because you'll be putting a death grip, you'll be tension. And that's the thing is, yeah, find something that's going to work with
you. Yeah, so yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I wanted to bring that up because I thought that was a good thing there for you to say in conversation. Well,
right. And you did remind me that if you go to a guitar shop and you try something, make sure those guitars, I believe that they set all those up. Like if you go to a guitar center and they're on the wall, I believe that they set all those up first to try. But one thing I will tell you, and even expensive company, the factories will generally set the strings with a high action to cover up the fact that there's fret bust or there's bad fretwork. And that's shortcutting on their part to get it out the door so that the customer has to, the R&D, or not the R&D, but the customer has to be the guinea pig and take the cost on themselves of having the frets leveled and dressed. It's very expensive, and you're looking at about $300, maybe more, depending on who you're talking to. And that is one thing. Also, fret ends, fret sprout. Fret sprout is a type of thing. Even expensive guitars get fret sprout, where you could get the guitar in brand new, even if it's a made-to-order, and it'll be good for about a month. But if you live in a dry climate, that fretboard or that wood is going to shrink. And so what happens is, if they did shoddy fret ends on the guitar, those fret ends are going to stick over that wood and start cutting your hands to ribbons. It will cut you. You'll bleed if you don't get it fixed. And there's so many great YouTube channels out there. One of the guys that I think is one of the most brilliant is Philip McKnight. I absolutely love that guy's stuff. He used to own a guitar shop. Now he does YouTube like full time. He's so cool, man. He's got this, I don't even know the guy. He doesn't even know I exist, but I love his work. And he's got the sock test. Maybe we should call that the sock test. We'll call this that. He's got a box full of pantyhose, like small ones that you'd put over your foot, just like these pantyhose material, like sock things. He puts it over his hand. He goes, "All right, here we go, everybody, the sock test." He'll run his hand on the edge of the fretboard, and if it tears the sock, then you got fret sprout, really bad fret sprout. If the sock holds, then you're good. And I just thought it was awesome. And so I will tell you that even expensive guitars will have that problem down the road. One way you can get around that, if you start to feel it a little bit, go and get yourself some humidifiers for your guitar case. And always, you got an expensive guitar, follow the builder's advice. Keep it in the, if you're not going to play it, you'll keep dust off of it. You'll be able to regulate the wood and everything a lot better. It protects the finish. You know, don't be leaving your guitar by the window all day. Oh, I want to show this off so someone breaks in my house. No, it's keep your guitar in the case, and it will help you with fret sprout and all those things. Get some of those humidipacks. The Dario makes them. I've got them for my Tourney Ball guitars. And it's great, because what it does is it takes that fretboard and it expands again, and it gets rid of the frets, or at least keeps it at bay for a few. Because where Ben and I live, it's very dry. It's a desert. And so while it's great for a guitar that it won't fluctuate as far as, you know, truss rod and action. I used to live in New York. It's very humid. And my fretboard would always be, my truss rod always have to be adjusted humidity. But there are drawbacks to living in a dry climate. So depending on where you live, make sure that you keep a humidifier in your case if you live in a dry climate. And that'll really help with fret sprout. So,
well, nothing a shot can't cure, right? Just
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Dude, you've got fret sprout.
You got fret sprout, man. So you could do like one of those drug, you know, call your doctor, find out if Imitrex is right for you.
Fret sprout got you down?
Fret sprout got you down, yeah. But it's on my back.
Dang it. Not yeah, again.
I can't reach it.
I'm bleeding out on stage. Oh. I got fret sprout again. Damn it.
Get Rusty. Get my roadie. Tell him I need my wand. Can't reach it.
We're probably the only people laughing about this. That's what's about it.
Yeah.
Fret sprout. Good stuff. Yeah. So I wanted to bring up, and this is just kind of a question for you growing up, and I know these changed and have changed. What was the first band that really influenced you?
Well, it was three bands that are tied for that distinction. Van Halen, Z-Top, and I hate to say this. Oh, probably the Cars. I don't hate that. Probably the Cars.
Oh, they got some great music.
No, that's... and I was going to say, I hate to say it because I was going to mention Duke Jupiter, but nobody does. But they had a hit on the radio on MTE called Little Lady. And my sister used to play that song. She had it on a cassette. The album was called White Knuckle Ride. And I remember the cover of the cassette was it showed a guy gripping the handle and he's on a roller coaster and his Timex watch is flying apart because he's going so fast on a roller coaster. But it was, that song's called Little Lady, and it was like the only hit that they had. And my sister had a 72 Monte Carlo and she cranked that up in there. And so that I was like 4 years old and stuff. But then we would see David Lee Roth. His band was great, too, because he had just left Van Halen. And obviously Van Halen had Jump and Hot for Teacher and all those videos, too. So Jump and Just Like Paradise were the two songs that I remember as a little kid. We'd call David Lee Roth, we'd call him the jump, because he's always jumping on stage. And, you know, he's in Van Halen, they were dated Jump, right? So we call him the Jump.
The kung fu kicks, the spins. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
every video he was doing something like that, right?
Yes. This guy still has moves. He still has the moves.
That's crazy.
He took a microphone stand and was twirling that thing like it was a toy baton.
I think he was more of the entertainer between the two singers. Sammy Hagar.
Well, yeah. I mean,
you know, he was, and this is by no means, you know, saying that either one of them was better than the other. You could debate that eons and you still won't come up with the correct answer. But I think
they're both awesome. I mean,
David Lee Roth was definitely an entertainer, singer when it came to his style and what he presented, obviously through, like you're saying, the videos and the stage antics that he would do.
Funny guy, man. Super
yeah, fun. Man, it's interesting because I kind of grew up on the same stuff. I was more exposed with the Eddie Van Halen. So Van Halen, Don Dokken, you know, George Lynch was huge to me. And Warren DeMartini with Rat. I think the big one that stood out, I think that got me remotivated to learn guitar, was Chris DeGarmo from Queensryche. And that whole scenario has always been interesting to me. All the details, you can't really find out a lot. I mean, you can and can't. There's a lot of information out there on why he left the band. But the band itself definitely went through a couple of albums and its downfall. They've got a new singer, Todd Latore. I think I've talked to you about him before. They definitely kind of gotten back more to their heavier roots. But it's always interesting for me when you think about these bands that you grew up with and interchanging people or people leaving the band having such a huge effect on the sound, the vibe, and what you get out of it. I wanted to ask you that question because to me, the kind of the style and songs that you write and the influences, you know, they kind of shine out for the ones that stood out the most to you when you were growing up, you know, or that got you into it. So
I like upbeat sounded stuff. Like, I guess maybe that's, yeah, I got to say Eddie was my guy as far as a guitarist, but, you know, and then there was Yngwie Malmsteen, of course, who followed, you know, after that, but I discovered all the guitar gods, but Eddie was one. But like, you talk about influences as far as, you know, coming from you liked, resonated with you. And I think that I really have to say, you know, because when you said that, it really resonated with me. I really, really, really liked Van Halen stuff so much, especially with the, like, when I, because, and I only say Roth because when I was a little kid that age, he was in the band, right? And then he had a solo career, right? That stuff made me feel happy. It made me, it had a humor to it, but it also had a really cool, awesome rock pyrotechnic quality to it. The songwriting is so solid, and I'm going to just settle this right now, and this is how I feel about Van, okay? They had three really good singers, okay? And I know Gary Cherone's awesome, okay? I like his stuff. I like Extreme immensely.
Oh, Extreme is, it's fantastic music.
And Gary Cherone is in there, and I really, really, really thought he did a great job on tour playing Sammy's stuff and even Dave's stuff because he's such an eccentric guy, okay? Let's forget about people complaining about Van 3, which I believe is a great, I love that album. And because I love Eddie Van Halen's writing style, and I don't care if people like that comment or not. I like stuff for my own reasons, but I will tell you that when Hagar was in the band, he was equally as awesome as Roth because he had it was a different quality side of Van that was awesome. You go back and you listen to right now, Humans Being, all the all the songs we talked about, listen to the Balance album, that album is the high point of when Sammy was in the band. The songwriting is so great. It's got so much passion behind it. I just love the instrumentation. I'm telling you, those guys, when Sammy joined the band and they started a gel as a group, they meant business. But it was entertaining, but in a very, very rich and musical way that just, I can't even put words to how awesome the songs were when all those guys were working together.
Yeah, and it's the gelling of all the instruments, the musicianship between all three
it's
of them.
So like the vocals and the guitars, the drums, bass, all of it. I mean, just the song, the lyrics. I mean, just, my gosh.
Dreams was huge. The song Dreams, that one is, when you're talking about like uplifting songs or songs that get you dreams, is one of those ones I could hear all the time right now, like you're saying. It's just the opening piano gets you every single time it starts up. I would almost say that I don't know if the radio edited still plays the one with the actual guitar solo from Eddie Van Halen. I think I heard one the other day that didn't. I was like very disappointed that they edited that out.
Yeah, that sucks. And the radio's worthless when it comes to accurately portraying Van Halen stuff. But you will get some really good DJs out there that know they pay the proper respect. And I will say that if you guys have seen, I didn't mention, check out the latest video from Wolfgang Van. His band is called Mammoth, the original name of Van Halen, which I think is brilliant. That kid, well, he's not a kid anymore. He's only 10 years 30. Younger than me. But
yeah, he's 30, yeah. 30. He turned 30 just recently, I think, didn't he?
Yeah. So he's not a kid. He's a grown man. But that guy is just oozing with talent. It resonates with it. And you know, I think it's great because he's not, like, copying his dad. He's taking all that talent and all of that time jamming with his dad and moving forward with his own sound, and it's an amazing sound. I just think it's great. And I'm not saying that because it's Wolfgang Van Halen. If something sucks, it sucks, and I'll tell you that. But this, I was just blown away. And he wasn't doing tapping or like crazy guitar solos. He was doing riffs in the song that just blew my mind. And God bless him. More power to him. Even as a fan, I'll tell you right now, I have a gap in my life right now with Eddie. I'm going to tell you right now, it still hurts. I lost my mom in August. I lost on my wife's side a guy who always loved my guitar playing, and I just lost him a few months after that, and then Eddie Van Halen passed, like in between those two periods. And I got to tell you, Eddie Van Halen passing is definitely one of those legs kicked out from under the table for me personally. I didn't realize how much that guy was as far as one of the pillars of my musical development and my love of music in general. And it goes all the way back to when I was like 4 years old. And it's not just like a fanboy thing or anything like that. It's the musician that he was resonating as a musician. And I'm not like anywhere near close to that guy's, you know, level or anything. But it doesn't matter because we all have our own voice on the instrument. And I can tell you that I didn't realize how much him just being around and knowing that, hey, we could have more stuff from that guy really affected in that gap that is now there. But what you could do is take that instead of focusing on something negative, take a look at what he has left us. And the great thing about their songs is that for me, they're timeless. They have no time stamp. they're not dated at all, because that's the brilliance of what that band is their songwriting is that good, where you can listen to it and say, you know what, this riff is a riff, and this riff means business. It's awesome.
I think you can say that for a lot of great musicians that came out of the 80s time era frame. A lot
but
of
these
people,
guys were a different level.
Yes, I agree with you. I 100% think that there is definitely going to be a huge gap. And will there ever be another person to step up into it as influential as he was? I don't ever know. I don't know if I'll ever see it in my lifetime. Even just the influence he had on the musicians in the 80s and his effect on them. A lot of great musicians. I think he raised the bar, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You have people like I mentioned, George Lynch, Warren DeMartini, that knew their instrument. It wasn't just, you know, poppy songs and hair bands to get chicks and get laid and get drunk. They knew their instrument and they were musicians to a core. And I think there's a handful on a set of those, like you're saying, their music, you could go back and listen to it and it's timeless. And then you can go back and listen to some other songs that you used to listen to and be like, eh, you know, at the time it was great, but now when I listen back to it, you know, it's not as meaningful, or it's not as influential on you as it used to be. So I absolutely agree with you on your comments with Eddie. And it's going to be a big hole to fill in the music industry as far as musicianship goes. I noticed that in for me, at least, I noticed that in the mid-90s, it started kind of going away from the technicality of the guitar itself and the musicianship. On the bands that were coming out, and I'm not trying to insult the music that came out in that era. It was different. It wasn't as, you know, like you're saying, when Van Halen clicked and they were writing music, it meant business. And I think some of that musicianship and technicality is definitely not as prevalent as it used to be. And a lot of the music that comes out now, I do think there's people out there that still do it. There's still, Bill Laverty from Firehouse, I think I brought him up for, you know, he was I first heard their first album and I was just like, holy crap, this guy is fantastic. He's got mad skill and he's still out there writing music. You have to go out and you have to seek it. It's not going to be on the radio but there's still people out there that are technically great at what they do. And when you take that time and energy and you focus on learning that instrument, knowing the instrument, and I don't know, we've talked a lot today about the instrument itself and making sure it's in tune, making sure you have it up to par for what you're trying to do and your comfortability. I think if I can pass on anything, you know, when you take a look at music, definitely listen to a lot of different types of music, figure out what inspires you, but also, you know, challenge yourself to learn that instrument a little bit more in depth in any way possibly that you can. If it's learning new chords, if it's learning a new scale, if it's learning composition, you know, even put the guitar down and learn your notes on the frets, you know, and how they combine and why you can go from octave to octave, however you want to do it. Push yourself a little bit further, because I'm hoping that there will come a time again when that kind of musicianship is definitely out there in the music scene. And maybe we'll get, some more people that are influential that we can go, hey, you know, that's pretty freaking cool. What they're doing is really cool. It's not going to be Eddie Van Halen, but, you know, what they're doing and what they're trying to do is pretty sweet. Tom Morello, you know, he definitely has his own style and his own character and his own invention when it came to his guitar playing. So, there, you know, there are some people out there that I think try to take that mantle and that flame and run with it.
There's a lot of great musicians out there, rock guys out there. They're still out there doing it, and they're just not getting the coverage. And there's even super groups out there that, like Sons of Apollo, they're a group that's just, they take all that virtuoso talent and pack it into one. And there's a lot of good, really decent acts out there like Advantage. I think people, for as much time as people spend on the internet, it's surprising to me how much they don't know what's going on. And I'll only say this once because it's not the platform of this show. Get your face out of the politics and get your face in the music. Get away from that vile trash. And get back into the things that excite you in life and the passions you have. If it's music, go get into it. And I can tell you personally, I got depressed. I got away from it because of things that were going on that were distractions in my life. But you know what? I'm coming back to the music and getting back into passion. Get involved in the things that are passionate in your life. And if it's music, give it all you got and have fun with it. And me personally, I'm taking lessons because you can learn from anybody. It doesn't matter how good you are. You can learn from anybody. Randy Rhodes, what I'm kind of like Jerry Springer to my final thought. Right? Randy Rhodes would go, and when he was on tour with Ozzy, he would go from town to town. He'd go take guitar lessons in town. And if he ended up, teaching the teacher, he'd still pay for the lesson, you know? And that's the kind of thing. We can always keep learning. At the very least, you'll learn not what not to do and learn how maybe someone's not very good and maybe they give them some pointers. I mean, we're at the end of the day, we should be there to help each other out, right? So stay focused on the music. Don't let the distractions of this world pull you. If you're a musician, music chooses, and there's something that burns in that, it's a fire that will never be totally quenched. You can run away from it. And you know what? It's going to bug you the rest of your life. And people that hear my voice know what I'm talking about. Ben, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's like The Godfather. Once you're out, it pulls you back in. You know, it's yeah, I think when music, you know, it touches your soul when you make a connection with it at whatever level. I mean, there's some people that, you know, they can't sing a tune. No, doesn't mean you can't enjoy music. Doesn't mean you can't, you know, pick up an instrument, whatever it is. I mean, if you have to, whatever, you know, that connection is with music. I think it is long lasting. And I think you feel it, you feel it. I when I was a kid, I'm telling you, I probably wore my parents' bed out jumping up and down on it, listening to Heart and John Cougar Mellencamp. You know, all those, the great music that I've brought up before. You know, I'd go in there and I'd blare the freaking music, you know, turn it up to 11. I had the bug back then, and that was just listening to the music. And I hadn't even known, obviously, when I was a little kid that I was going to play guitar. And throughout the years, I enjoyed music so much that those influential people, kind of led me in that direction. And you find that connection with the music, or you find those kind of people that inspire you. Like I'd mentioned, Chris DeGarmo, huge influence on me on playing style and writing. But yeah, don't be afraid to pick up whatever instrument or however you want to get connected with it, because it'll be long lasting and you can't get away from it. I mean, I've gone weeks, sometimes even months in my life without playing, and I've always come back to it.
You reminded me of, I don't know if any of the folks out there ever watched the Police Academy films, but you reminded me of getting reacquainted with the guitar, and I go, feel the gun. Caress the gun. Until it's a living.
Well, I told you on that last podcast, man, one of those guys I grew up in high school, he bought a guitar. He slept with the guitar. Not in an intimate matter, but, you know, it's all about going to bed and sleeping next to his guitar to get to know it. But I want to make sure that we give some shouts out. We close up the podcast. The McSauce guys, they're always awesome. You can check them out. Paul Lynch. In his podcast, Paul's another guy I know from work. Sorry.
Nice.
Chuck Lynch.
Shout out anyway, right?
Shout out anyway for Paul. Yay. Go Paul. I think it's, their conversations are interesting. They had an interesting one, Catholicism and going to church, and I was chuckling, and I think I commented on their latest, one of their podcasts that they did. It was fun to listen to. Brought back memories.
Fine.
Yeah. So I want to give a shout out to those guys for sure. Thanks for listening. Greg Atencio, I appreciate you writing in. We just posted our most recent one where we talked about, you know, music from movies and stuff, but we answered your question, which reminds me, you know, if you guys have questions or you want reviews from us or comments, we appreciate them. We want to interact with you guys. And Justin, do you have any shouts you want to give out?
Yeah. Let's see. Just real quick. I would like to say shout out to, you know, obviously shout out to Tony McAlpine. I think that's he's a cool cat, and he's one of my favorite players. I've had the benefit of taking lessons from him. I'm back in it again. So shout out to him. Check out his Death to Roses was his latest effort. He's got another one coming out. And he's going to be touring for that here next year, you know, when we can get released to go to concerts and shows, kind of like we talked about earlier. He's got another one coming out here soon. He's going to be supporting that. But, yeah, shout out to him. He's an awesome guy, great teacher. And also, a shout out to Wolfgang Van Halen, because, you know, I was to tears when I saw his latest. He's got another single out, and I just saw how cool that guy is, just forging ahead. and the music is so cool. And he's had a lot of people say a lot of rotten Twitter, and you know, I feel for the guy. I really do. And but the guy's a warrior. He's a musical warrior, and he just goes back at it. I am just amazed by what this guy's putting out. And I'm, as a fan, I hate to say this, I'm a fan, but I'm proud of what he, because music like that is not the norm right now. What we have right now in the mainstream is not rock music, obviously, and there's no power to it. It's not my thing, but I will tell you that I'm with you, Ben. I look forward to the day when rock and roll has a place again, for the right reasons, to where it moves, inspires people. And I know that that's going to happen. But that's, you know, for me, I'm going to keep going forward and getting as good as I can on the instrument and become a better songwriter. And everyone can improve, even guys that have been doing it for 30 years. You learn as you go. And I'm going to push myself as hard as I can to be the best I can be going forward. And that's what I kind of made that pledge to myself. And I hope that this show will help do that. And I appreciate your energy, Ben, on this show. When there's days where I'm like, yeah, I don't know, I just, some days, just it's hard sometimes to kind of get priorities right. And I love the enthusiasm on this show, and I'm glad that you are a part of this. It keeps me going, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's awesome. The reason we're doing this show is because we do have a passion for music, and we love it so much. So
yeah, and to have a brother in arms such as yourself, it's awesome.
So I'll take that as a shout out to me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Shout out to Ben.
All right. Well, we're going to call it for now. We'll have another episode here in about 2 weeks. Stay tuned for this one to be posted. As always, Justin, it's a pleasure and it's fun and I enjoy it. And hopefully our listeners out there, thank you once again, you know, sticking through the hour or so of our passion and our love of music. Hopefully, like Justin said, we're inspiring you guys to either pick up an instrument or maybe you just like listening to us talk about stuff. We appreciate your patronage, and we'll see you here very soon.
All right, folks, you can hear yourselves.